This is Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia, and my co-host, Dr. Danielle Schurer of the Medical University of South Carolina, is on the line. This time, we talk about a new manual of medical ethics just released by the American College of Physicians as a supplement to the Annals of Internal Medicine. The 30-page manual, which is available free online, got high praise from an editorialist who wrote that, quote, "It goes well beyond the usual banalities to take brave stands on current issues," which is high praise. Those issues, by the way, include torture, interrogation, gifts from drug companies and other healthcare industries, and cost-effective care. Here with us to discuss the manual are two of the people on the committee that wrote it. Lois Snyder is an attorney and directs the American College of Physicians Center for Ethics and Professionalism, and Dr. Virginia Hood is the president of the American College of Physicians. She's also a professor of medicine and a clinician at the University of Vermont. Welcome, Ms. Snyder and Dr. Hood, to Clinical Conversations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Hood, it must have been an amazing experience for the committee to write a manual of medical ethics, even a brief one. Was this your first experience with writing definitively on medical ethics?
Well, this manual was first published in 1984, and this is now the sixth edition. I was actually fortunate to participate in writing or revising the fifth edition because I was on the Ethics, Professionalism, and Human Rights Committee of the American College of Physicians at that time. This is really my second time that I have participated in writing this or helping to edit and revise this ethics manual. I have written on medical ethics and given some talks on professionalism and ethics in both here in the United States and in other countries. And I do teach in a course for our medical students. The first 2 weeks of a medical school at the University of Vermont is comprised of a combined course where we try to integrate the basic issues of medical ethics, professionalism, along with epidemiology and genetics.
Ms. Snyder, I wanted to ask you, I'm guessing that as the director of the Professionalism and Ethics, it's the Ethics and Professionalism Center at the ACP, you have a unique, if non-clinical because you're an attorney, point of view in these things. Did you ever doubt that your committee would be able to come to consensus on some of these issues?
Well, as Virginia pointed out, we've been publishing an ethics manual since 1984. It's a very collaborative, consensus-based approach to writing the manual. We literally assign sections to members of the committee and the staff and go through line by line to do just that, to forge consensus among members and staff as to what the next edition will look like. Some issues can be contentious, but we've been able to come to consensus for six editions now.
And which of those areas for this particular issue, which of those were the most contentious and created the most discussion within the committee?
I think some of the newer issues that we're dealing with, social media and online professionalism, is an issue that we hadn't done much on in the past because it's a newer issue and raised concerns that perhaps there was a divide between maybe the younger and the older physicians on the committee and within the college about how to approach these sorts of issues. I don't know if I would say it was contentious, but it certainly involved
generated
a certain amount of discussion. And even still, you'll note that what we've largely done in the manual in many issues is stated principles and given guidance for everyday situations, but not gone into a tremendous amount of detail that we tend to do in our position papers and case studies that are sort of the follow-up to the ethics manual.
I was also struck there was one other area that you talked about, this issue of how society will pay for the care it provides. And you mentioned the cost effectiveness and resource allocation very explicitly. Can you talk a little bit more about how those discussions went and if you've had any feedback on that?
That's very interesting, actually. A lot of our language about efficient care, parsimonious care, mm-hmm. keeping in mind the equitable distribution of resources, is really not new to this edition of the Ethics Manual. It goes mm-hmm. back a number of editions, but it hasn't really been focused on by others in the past. It seems mm-hmm. to have generated a lot of attention this time around because of the state of the healthcare system mm-hmm. and the state of healthcare reform and the need to focus on these issues a little more closely. So we've been actually a little surprised that it's generated so much attention.
I might chip in here to say that I think Dr. Emanuel's editorial did focus on this issue, saying that it was a very important thing that the college had emphasized this particular point, that we have a responsibility to practice effective and efficient healthcare and mm-hmm. use resources responsibly, that it really is a focus of the college at present, even though we didn't expect it to come out as such from the ethics manual, that the college itself believes that cost-conscious care is something physicians have to deal with a lot more now than they did, partly because there are a lot more high-cost and to some extent high-effective cares, but because when you look at the healthcare costs in the country, they are increasing at an unsustainable rate, mm-hmm. and maybe up to 20 to 30% of those costs are related to overuse and misuse of either diagnostic tests or treatment mm-hmm. that in fact aren't of benefit to patients and mm-hmm. may even cause harm. Mm-hmm. So we feel this is something that we need to address both as a profession, that the public needs to address it, patients need to address it, and that yeah. we all need to have a conversation about this. Yeah. So we were actually quite pleased, even though, as Lois mentioned, a little surprised, that attention was drawn to this issue via the ethics manual.
Question for either one of you. What issues do you see emerging on the horizon, maybe for the next committee to discuss, things like technology-related or genetics? Anything that you didn't get a chance to talk about in this one that you think is coming up?
I think one issue that we did touch on but didn't develop, and I think will develop more in the future, is that of the new models of healthcare that are based around team-based care.
Uh-huh.
And that within those models of healthcare, which we certainly hope will improve continuity and coordination of care and mm-hmm. quality of care, there's a fragmentation of who's providing the care and mm-hmm. therefore who's accountable and who's responsible for these outcomes. So that this is going to be something that has to be worked out so that we can provide the best care to our patients through these new models of care, but also do it in an ethical and responsible way.
Mm-hmm.
And linked to that issue is how care is going to be paid for. There's been a lot of discussion and indeed implementation of the pay-for-performance concept, mm-hmm. that if we want better quality of care, maybe payment should be linked to how care is provided. Mm-hmm. And we feel that this has a large number of ethical implications, particularly that it may encourage people not to care for people who don't have good outcomes, because mm-hmm. that means they may not get paid for, or that they don't select patients who are sick. We know this is something insurance companies already do, and we
yep.
certainly feel that this is an issue that has to be dealt with. And that even if we are all trying to do the best kind of care and get the best quality, the issue is always, what do you measure, and is this the right measure? And if people just try to get one measure right so that they can show good, in quotes, quality, they may not be doing other things that would be equally valuable for the patient. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of issues within this topic, and I think it will be developed more in the future.
Well, I would echo those concerns as well, and also add this issue of stewardship of resources
yeah.
That we've also talked a little bit about, the idea of parsimonious care, of mm-hmm. doing clearly what is best for the patient, but also keeping in mind what is best for society, which doesn't mean rationing care. It doesn't mean denying care. It doesn't mean death panels. We had that whole discussion during the health reform debate, which really sort of was inflammatory and not particularly helpful. But it does mean providing the right care for the individual patient and keeping in mind that, you know, resources have to be distributed equitably. Mm-hmm. We also have a new section in this ethics manual on health system catastrophes, mm-hmm. about, you know, allocating ventilators in an emergency, dealing with scarce resources. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is going to be an increasing area of attention for us and for society. And, of course, you know, on a clinical level, the end-of-life care chapter remains very, very pertinent and will become, I think, increasingly important and perhaps contentious as baby boomers age. And as we know, baby boomers tend to be somewhat demanding when it comes to health care.
Not at all.
Spoken as a baby boomer.
Ms. Snyder, in the manual's appendix, you have a case method to help with decision making. Is that a new feature?
It is not actually a new feature. It uh-huh. has been in earlier editions of the manual, but we find that we get a very positive response to it. You know, the whole manual is geared toward helping physicians do everyday ethics, mm-hmm. apply ethics to everyday practice, and people find this is a good way to sort of work through a case that may be troubling them.
And your center has a website, which I did not go to. And so I'm wondering if there are other resources available there for people who are trying to grapple with some of these problems.
There are definitely other resources. Just go to acponline.org, do a search for the Center for Ethics and Professionalism, or look under the header Running a Practice. We have position statements on a variety of issues that expand on topics that we talk about in brief in the ethics manual. We have a case study series that elucidates these issues as well that people find very helpful in practice and also use as teaching tools. And it also allows physicians to get CME credit using the case studies. And actually, the ethics manual itself, for the first time, is going to be available for use for CME credit and also for maintenance of certification credit for physicians who are renewing their certification.
I will put the URL in the on the podcast. Let's go back a bit to the cost-effectiveness question. One of the things, as we know, that the whole question of resource allocation has entered the political sphere, especially this year, and the cry now has gone away from death panels, but it's back to the old question of, can the government come between the physician and the patient? What are your thoughts about that?
The government has been involved in healthcare, you know, in this country for a number of years, and certainly ever since Medicare was introduced. And the government pays for some of the care. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really write regulations that tell physicians what to do. The insurers, who are also involved in paying for medical care, often make regulations that constrain physicians' practices. For example, they may only allow certain medications to be used by patients, or else the patients would have to pay more. So there are quite a lot now of outside forces that do influence how physicians or practice medicine at some level. Mm-hmm. But physicians have been left alone and should be left alone to do what's in the best interests of the patients and to work with the patients themselves to make the right decisions. So I don't think there is anything in any of the new laws that have come out through the Affordable Care Act that actually constrains physicians in any way that's particularly different than what's been going on in the past. And I'm not sure the government constrains physicians any more than private insurers do. So I think this is a little bit of a myth.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you. And here's the final question. What do you hope, Dr. Hood, that our listeners will do with the manual? Or what do you tell your students? What are you telling your students at Vermont to do with this manual?
I think when we think about medical decision-making, it is a challenge. And there are a number of factors that always have to be taken into account when we make medical decisions. There are the sort of straightforward medical scientific issues. There are environmental issues, such as what's available in the area. And there are ethical issues that are linked to what patients want, their own desires, the so-called autonomy, and trying to weigh the factors of doing good, not doing harm, and again, the equitable distribution of resources, the traditional tenets of ethics, in decisions for an individual patient. So what we want them to do is to look at the manual, to be able to read through areas and think about problems where there are challenges to making decisions and get some clues from that about how other people have thought of things and to reinforce the principles on which they need to make decisions. Decisions in medicine are not made from one point of view. We have to take into account evidence, scientific evidence, clinical situations, and patients' desires and needs and ethical principles. So from an individual patient level, that's what I would like them to take away. I also would like to think that the ethics manual being available to the public could help policymakers remember that the ethical principles that I just outlined, especially the just distribution of life-enhancing resources for people, need to be taken into account along with medical and economic issues when policy is made about our healthcare systems and how we deliver healthcare so that there is affordable, available, accessible, quality, and cost-conscious healthcare for as many people as possible within the community.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, Dr. Hood and Ms. Snyder, for speaking with us today.
It was a delight, Joe and Danielle. Thank you very much.
We
greatly enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
That was our 140th edition, and all the earlier ones may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch, an excellent way to keep current with the clinical research whose implications affect your daily practice. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, please. For myself and Dr. Danielle Scherer, thank you for listening.